Hey, we've been talking about anger and outrage all month long. And I don't know, maybe it's sort of like if you buy a green car and all of a sudden you notice green cars. Or maybe, as I suspect, that we really are a very, very angry society, a very angry culture. But it seems like all month long I've been noticing, you know, the outrage and the anger. There's just sort of swirls around everything and honestly around me. You know, I've realized like how many times I'm angry. And I don't know how it's been for you, but and I honestly think we have gained some really good insights from Scripture. And that's what I love about this series, and that's what I love about teaching at Action Church, honestly. It is sort of this opportunity to showcase how this amazing book we call the Bible, or series of books that was written thousands of years ago, is still so perfectly applicable to life today. But today we're going to talk about not just the problem of anger. We're going to wrap it up with the solution. The solution to not just anger, but to living in an angry world. But first I want to talk to you about math class. It's going somewhere, I promise. But do you guys remember, let's talk about middle school math class today. Not like, did anybody take calculus and they're like, oh, you'll use this? No, you won't. Unless you're like an engineer, I took that, I still haven't used that. Or, you know, maybe I'm not talking about like algebra 1, 2, or 7, or 7 times you took algebra. But remember middle school math. Middle school math is like when you actually learned the math skills that you have to have, you know, just like adding and subtraction and multiplication. And remember long division? Rick, remember when long division was the hardest thing in the world? You know, you're like, this long division thing, this is really long. Like, it's going to take forever to, you know, I got 99 problems in math is all of them. I mean, I remember like when multiplication and division, you're like, I'm never going to remember all this. All the way through 12, that's crazy. And just remember like how difficult that class was, but it's so important. And like, you learn math skills that you still need today. And that's honestly why I want to talk to you about middle school math classes. That's when we learned that there were two kinds of people, right? There were basically two kinds of people in life. There were math people and anything but math people. Remember, like, and you can be honest here. It's kind of dark in the theater. We're in church. Nobody's going to punch you or anything. And it's a long time from sixth grade. Do we have math people in here? I wanted to say, yeah, we have math people. So math people, thank you for your honesty. We don't hate you that much. But like, math people actually enjoyed math, right? Like, they looked forward to math class. They're like, you know, like the numbers sort of made sense. And they sort of looked around at everybody else and went, why don't you get it? I mean, this is just simple, you know, and they actually enjoyed it, and they enjoyed like sort of the rules of math and the order and the numbers. And then there was the anything but math people, you know, we got anything but math people in it. Yes, we have lots of anything but math people. And you guys, we just like thought like, I'll do penmanship. I don't know. I don't even think they do that anymore. But like, we would choose anything other than math. Like, we'll do that little acrostic thing and the word search, even though that sucks. Like, we'll do anything but math because math is hard and math doesn't make sense and the numbers make my head hurt. And you know, it's just funny. Like, there were two types of people, and we learned that. Now here's the thing. And I hope you had a good math teacher. I had a really great math teacher, and I remember like in fifth and sixth grade, like, what she understood is she just seemed to love math. Like, that's the thing about a really good math teacher, is like, she loved math and she believed and understood that like math was the language of the universe. Like, if you don't know math, it's going to be, you know, you want to learn this. And so a really good math teacher, and if you had one, you know this already. Like, she realized that there were students who loved math, you know, the math people. We won't call them math nerds. They were math people, all right? I'm trying to be cool here. But like, the math people and the anything but math, she realized there were both kinds of people in her class, but yet somehow a really good math teacher like inspired all of them, right? Like she graded fairly, you know, like she was fair with her grading, you know, it was like by the book. But on the other hand, like, she wanted to reward the people who were good at math because that's important. And then of course she would, you know, there has to be some, you know, she would mark off things that were wrong, but she tried not to crush the spirits of the people who weren't that great in math. You know, so somehow a really good math teacher looks at all of her students and cares about them learning math. And, you know, like, you know, didn't just like use pop quizzes to punish us, but actually like use quizzes and stuff to make us better. And if I know I sound like I want to stand on the desk and go, my cap. I'm not talking about like she wasn't Robin Williams, but a good math teacher sort of inspires everyone to be better at math, even the students who hate math. And at the end of sort of sixth grade, you actually do the math you would know for the rest of your life. And it was pretty awesome. That's a good teacher. Now, let's talk about a bad math teacher, like a really, really awful math teacher. Now, Josiah was worried. He usually worries. I pitched this sermon idea to him on Thursday, and he was afraid this was going to come off like some sort of commercial for homeschooling. That is not true, because we homeschool, and I'm the bad math teacher. Like the other day, true story, my daughter Reagan's in sixth grade. It kind of made me think of this. And like, I thought I knew how to do sixth grade math. And she was pretty outraged. She had a little bit of rage in her when she realized when she scored it that I had told her everything wrong. And I was like, it's been 35 years since Daddy was in sixth grade. So we can just look, you know, so this is not in any way going, hey, you should homeschool. But here's the thing. There are really bad math teachers, right? Like, imagine, maybe you didn't have one. Thank God you're not in my homeschool. But maybe you didn't have, but just imagine, like, a really bad math teacher. Now, I don't know why she's bad, or he. Maybe, like, they hated math as a kid. You know, can you imagine, like, maybe this really, really bad math teacher had a horrible experience in math. Maybe they had, like, a terrible sixth grade math teacher who was like 450 years old the year before she retired. You know, she's like, I want to kill these kids and go home. I don't know, like, what happened to this awful math teacher. Or maybe that wasn't it at all. Maybe she started liking math and actually took like education class in college, and maybe she had one of those really like wacky professors in college and was like, you don't need the math book, you know, that was written by old guys, you know, that's so old. We're way past that now, you know. So I don't know why. Or maybe this really terrible math teacher, just imagine, like, maybe she's just sort of like, you know, she's too nice, right? You can't be too nice as a teacher. Maybe she's sort of like naive, and she's like, I think everyone should get a good grade. I don't want to give a... And so here's the thing about really bad math teachers, and you think about it, like, go back to your sixth grade self. Imagine, like, a really bad math teacher who says, everybody gets an A in the class. Would that not be the most popular math teacher in the world? Like, that's popular, right? If you get a math teacher, you know, maybe she's young, maybe she's straight out of college, and she's just like, everyone in my class gets an A. There'll be no bad grades in this. That would be the most popular math class in middle school. I mean, that would be awesome. And maybe, in fact, I can imagine, like, a really bad math teacher might say, you know, answers can change, right? Like, if you really, really believe your answer is right, I'm going to accept it because you tried really hard, right? Like, you've had teachers like that. They're like, I love teachers like that. It was awesome. You know, but, like, really popular because she's like, you know what? If you think 12 times 12 is 142, that's close enough. You know, it seems like it would be 142. I get it. You know, like, that's a good answer. So you can just imagine. And so maybe, like, imagine this really bad math teacher. Like, maybe she has the best heart. Maybe she had a bad, I don't know. But, like, she just sort of wants everybody to get a good grade. Like, there's no wrong answer. She would say, like, you know, sometimes teachers say, like, there's no bad question. She says, there's no wrong answers in my math class, and it would be like the most popular class. It would be awesome, except that it wouldn't, right? Because there would be problems. And here's why. Here's why, because math answers, excuse me, are mutually exclusive, right? Like, if you go, hey, you know what? 12 times 12, 142, that's fine. That's close enough. You know, I mean, it's honestly, it looks better than 144. It seems like 12 times 12 would be 142, right? And some of you right now that aren't math people, you're like, I'm not sure which one it is, but I'm not going to say anything. So anyway, like, you know, like 12 times 12 is 142. That's fine. But the problem is, what if a kid puts down 12 times 12 is 144? You know, like, they can't both be right, right? Like, so all of a sudden, like, the kid who has 144, like, he's wrong all of a sudden. He's like, wait, the math book says, you know, and all of a sudden there's like, it's not that fun anymore. You know, you're like, that can't be right. Like, I wrote down what the book says. I'm looking right here in the book, and it says 12 times 12, and you're saying it's 142 because he said, see, all of a sudden, like, the problem is the only thing that's more annoying than one correct answer is lots of correct answers, isn't it, right? Like, this would get to be a problem pretty quickly. You know, even though it started out really popular, even though it seems like a good idea, you go, well, of course, there should be more answers than one. I mean, that's so old. I mean, but all of a sudden, And here's what happens. Now, if you're an enterprising kid like I would be, like if the answers in the book aren't the answers anymore, you know, if we're kind of going off like the teacher decides, because somebody has to decide, right? Like in a math class, if the score key doesn't matter, if the book doesn't matter anymore, all of a sudden we go, well, if you really believe your answer, it might be right, or if she believes her answer, and it can't be all the answers. So after a while, a teacher has to start picking, like, you're right, it's 142. That's the new answer. That's the answer. 144 is wrong. 142 is right. 12 times 12 is 142, unless you get a better offer. You know, right? Like, instead of bringing her an Apple, what if you brought her a new Apple product? And you go, I think it's 132. You know, like, all of a sudden, it could get corrupt. Can't you imagine that in a really bad math class? Because the teacher is deciding what the answer is, not the book anymore. And all of a sudden, you go, well, maybe, you know, maybe I could bribe the teacher, or maybe she likes me better, or maybe if I just keep my mouth shut, my answer will be right, and his answer will be wrong. And all of a sudden, it's madness. And people are upset, and they're going, it's corrupt. And you know, like the math nerds, I mean the math people, they're going like, this is terrible, this isn't right. And other people are arguing like, well, my answer's right. And it just, and here's another thing that's funny about this math class, and it just happens. even in a math class where every answer's right, even in a math class where 12 times 12 is 142 because it's close enough, what about the guy? And there's always the guy, and it's always a guy, yes. It's the guy who goes, no, I think 12 times 12 is 7. You know, and like 7 is actually not more or less correct than 142, but it's more wronger, right? I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but like you go, that guy's wrong. Like it's not 7. Come on, it might not be exactly 142, but at least like, dude, it's not 7. That's wrong. And isn't it funny, like at every bad math class, you know, you might go, well, that's closer at least. Like even the people who are saying that 12 times 12 is 142, they know it's not 7, right? They're like, that guy's wrong. Like, you're an idiot. That is not, wait a minute, I talked about that last week and I said idiot in the sermon. That's wrong. But like, isn't it amazing? Like, even in this classroom where there's no right answer, even in the most corrupt, messed up classroom in America, there's some answer that you give that's just wrong, right? Like, everybody will agree, like, it's not 12 times 12 is 7. That's impossible. 12 groups of 12 does not equal 7. It's just never going to be. And all of a sudden, the most popular math class, what started out to be such a great idea, is the angriest place on earth, isn't it? Like, all of a sudden, everybody's angry. Because math people are angry because they're like, I have the right answer, and you scored it wrong. And someone else is angry, like, my answer is just as right as his answer. Like, why is 142 a better answer than 143? You know, mine's actually closer. You know, and if we throw out the book, all of a sudden, like, and then the guy over there who's like, 12 times 12 is 7. How's that? You know, like, and everybody's like, no, you're wrong. And like, this, all of a sudden, there's just all this argument and fighting, and it's a mess. Now, meanwhile, in real life, all right, and if you were confused about this, this is sixth grade math. So 12 times 12 is 144. I checked. I used my calculator. It's an iPhone 5, but I think it's still right. But anyway, like 12 times 12 is still 144. No matter what is said inside that bad math class, right? Like no matter what happens in real life, there is a correct answer. And here's another thing, gang. In real life, there are consequences to this answer. Now, here's what made me think about this. True story. I buy a lot of masking tape. I'm a painting contractor, and I mean when a lot. I don't mean like 10 rolls. I mean I will spend, truthfully, like $500 to $700 a month in masking tape. If I could only figure out the way to recycle that, that would be awesome. Instead, I make really big tape balls and film. No, I don't. But like I use about $500 to $700 worth of masking tape. So here's the thing. What I do is like it matters like how much it costs. So I'm always trying to find the best deal because I throw this money away every month. So I made a deal like with one of the big box stores, and the cool thing, they're really nice to me. They like order me cases and cases of masking tape. I'll like just be able to text them and go, hey, I need 12 cases or 20 cases, and they'll just put it in a cart and call me when it comes in, and I just roll in with the cart. A rollout takes me like 5 minutes, and it's awesome. So anyway, I was doing this a few weeks ago, true story, and that day I happened to have 12 cases of masking tape. Follow the math. Yeah, you can see where this is going. So I had 12 cases with 12 in each box, 144, right? So I have 12 cases. I pull up to the cashier. And the cashier looked at me and she said these words. This is exactly what she said. She said, well, actually, I said something first. I pull one out of the case, which is what I always do, so they can scan it. I pull one roll out of the case. I hand it to her. And I go, I've got 12 cases of 12. And she said, I can't check out that many items. And I'm stunned. I don't even know what to do at that point, you know? So I just looked at her like that dog turning sideways. True story, like, I didn't know what to say. And she looked back at me, and we both stared at each other for a little bit. And I go, wait, I do this all the time. You know, I do this all the time. Like, you just put the items in and scan this one and put them all in, and I'll be out of your way. No, you know? And then she said this to me, like, she looked confused, and she looked at the tape in her hand, and I'm looking at her, and we're just sort of having this moment where I don't know, it was weird. But anyway, she says to me, well, maybe if you take them out of the cases. Now I'm losing it. I'm like, you know, I don't know what to, I'm imagining like this transaction that I thought was going to take literally seconds, because I was there at 6:30 in the morning, which is why I go early in the morning. Like, all of a sudden I'm imagining like the rest of my morning being boop, boop. Can you imagine like 144 rolls of freaking mask, boop. And then like the whole reason I buy them in cases is so I don't have to handle like bags and bags and bags and rolls of tape. I put the cases in, you know, and it's just like, I'm like, oh, no. Then I was like, here's what we're going to do. And that's what, you guys know this about me, like, right? When I start to get mad, I tell you what we're going to do, and it means what you're going to do. So I go, oh, no. Here's what we're going to do. We're not going to do that. I said, maybe you need to get someone over here. But I've got 12 cases of 12, and we're going to ring this up in the boxes. And she didn't say anything. And I'm going, oh, God, it's going to be boop, boop. You know, I'm just, my whole morning is going away in front of my eyes. You know, and I'm like, this can't. And then she said this to me, and this is when I realized something. She said, how many rolls do you think you have? So I said 7. And I saved like $400. So no, I'm lying. That would be stealing. See, that was honestly the first thing I thought. I was like, 7. I think 7. No, but honestly, here's the truth. Like, this has absolutely happened that way. I said 144. She's like, doo, 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 boop, we're out of there. But here's the thing. I realized, like, even though she didn't know what 12 times 12 was, it mattered, right? Like, it mattered not to, like, make fun of her, not like, oh, well, you're stupid. It was like, if we don't get this right, like, you can count these, right? Like, you could, if you go boop, boop, 144 times, that's what's coming out. It's not 142, it's not 140, it's not 7. Like, there's a certain amount of masking tape there. And if I would have walked out and not paid for all of them, technically, trust me, they would have never noticed, but technically, I would have been shoplifting, right? Like, I could have, if she would have went, oh, 7, that's awesome, boop, boop, boop. I mean, we could have walked out of there and, like, I would be broadcasting from prison this morning. It would be awesome. You know, you're like, hey, Don's in the paper. At least he didn't get caught with what was in his van. Oh, that's a different sermon. But, like, here's the thing. Like, imagine like that. Or, you know, she could have lost her job, honestly, right? Like, if I would have went, 120, and she went, okay, 120. You know, like, later on, inventory would catch that, and she could lose her job. So that would be terrible. Like, so there's real-world consequences to 12 times 12 is 144. And I say all that to say this. You're like, wow, we're like 20 minutes in. You said nothing. I know. But here's what I want to say to you this morning. American culture is a lot like a really bad math class, right? Like, it's a matter of, like, there's no wrong answer. They're all right answers. But all of a sudden, it's the angriest place on the planet. You know, because you and I, we learned like this a few weeks ago, like when you're angry, it's because you see something that's not right. And you go, that's not right, that's not right. And so it's like American culture is like a really bad math class. And I know like some of you that bothers you. You're like, oh, but I like having multiple answers. You know, that's the way I get that. That's popular. And you're like, so you're going to say then there's only one answer to everything and God knows and it's in the Bible. Yeah, I will. But here's the thing I want you to know. In this story, in this really bad, and I realized this week, I'm like, Jesus was a genius, because he told these parables that were like, took like 2 seconds. You could tweet Jesus' parables. I spent 15 minutes telling you one, and you're like, I don't know about that whole tape thing. But anyway, like, isn't it amazing? Like, if you think about the story about the really bad math class. And you go, where do Christians fit into that? Where do God's followers fit into that? And you might think this morning, you go, well, I know. It's the really, you know, the math people, that's Christians. And the people that don't like math, that's, no, it's not. No, it's not at all. In fact, you know who Christians are? Christians are not math people or anything but math people. In fact, a lot of Christians are anything but math people. They're just the people that believe the book. Not the people who go, oh, I did everything right. Nope. That wouldn't be my story, gang. But I've come to realize that, like, there is an answer. And I might not always like the answer. I may not have followed the answer. But it's definitely important that there is an answer and that our Creator gave us an answer. And it's not anything goes, because there's only one answer that actually works, and it can't be more than one answer because they are mutually exclusive so many times, and that's why there's so much anger in our society. Now, I promised you that I would tell you the solution this morning. And I know what a couple of you are thinking, and it's okay, because it's been the idea for years. Like, you didn't come up with this, and you don't feel bad if you think this, because I'm going to bust you out on it. But some of you are thinking, like, so why don't we just take over the math class, right? Like, we have the answer. We have the book on our side. Let's, you know, the teachers should be out of here. Let's get rid of the teacher. Let's take over. You know, the solution has to be done. I know what the solution is. Like, we know the answer. We have the book. We have God on our side. I can almost hear, like, your thoughts going, you know, and, like, we should not let this happen. Like, we, and please, like, I understand why you think that. People have thought that for centuries, ever since Jesus. And I want to give you three good reasons not to think that. Number one, it's been tried, right? Like, from the Crusades to the Inquisition to the Bible Belt where I grew up, like, people have decided, like, I know the answer. I know the moral thing to do, and there's only one right answer, and so I'm going to take power, and I'm going to take over this class, and I'm going to make sure that everybody has only one answer. That's right answer, and it just never works. It never works, because you can't legislate morality. You can make people do something, but you can't legislate. You can't overpower people and make them good. Like, I grew up in a place where it's like, we were like, you know, there was, and you can't even imagine this now, but in the Midwest where I grew up in the Bible Belt, like, there was nothing open on Sunday. Nothing but churches. Like, no, some, for years there wasn't even gas stations open. Like, nothing like teaching people to love Jesus, like them running out of gas on the side of the road. Like, there was nothing open. But it still didn't make people go to church. It just made them a little angry. So it's just amazing. Like, and so that's one reason I would tell you, don't even think that, because it's just not going to work. Like, it's been tried, trust me. And another reason is this. Another reason why we shouldn't try to just take over the math class is because we're not very good math teachers, honestly. And this morning, if I would ask you, like, the biggest math person in this room, the biggest math nerd, the person who says, oh, I love math, I got straight A's in math, I got a 4.0 in high school, I took calculus and I use it every day. You know, like, you're the biggest math person in the world. But did you get every answer right every time throughout your entire career in high school and college and grade school? No, you didn't, did you? Even the best math student in the world, you got things wrong. Even if you have a 4.0, you got things wrong. Even if you took AP classes, you answered things wrong. And guess what? Your friends saw it. So if we try to take over math class, you know what our friends are going to say? Wait a minute, Don. You've got a lot of answers wrong. I've seen you. I've seen you make mistakes before. And they're right. Who are you to make me do this thing that you don't even do? Because we're hypocrites. Because the best of us, we've got answers wrong. And finally, here's the best reason not to take over math class, because Jesus didn't. I mean, ever think about that? Like, Jesus, who actually didn't have any wrong answers, who never sinned, and, like, people were always coming to him going, you got to take over. Like, look at the Romans. They're terrible. Do you realize they burn people on crosses by side of the road for streetlights? These people are evil. You should take over. And he said, no. My kingdom's not of this world. And when he left, he didn't say, and you better get busy and get the votes together and get the armies together. Let's take over this place. No. He said, go into the world and preach the gospel. Tell the good news. So if Jesus didn't, why would we? And here's the thing, though. And I want to tell you the solution, but I want to tell you this first. Even in a terrible math class, even in our world that we live in, sensible people, they control their temper. And they earn respect. by overlooking wrong. See, that still works, even in a bad math class, even when the teacher's wrong. Even when you get scored wrong, even though by the book you're doing it right. A sensible student, a sensible person, a sensible American, they control their temper. They don't rave out on Facebook or Twitter or to their friends who elicited it. That's not the way it works. And even in a bad math class, the best policy, the very best way you could live would be to be quick to listen, right? Like that would still work even in a terrible math class. Quick to listen, slow to speak, and slower yet to get angry. And even a very horrible math class, even in America where everything seems upside down if you're a follower of Jesus, you don't want to let bitterness into your heart, right? Because if you carry over anger every day and you become angry, I think Satan loves that. In fact, I know that he does. Nothing better than getting Christian people all angry and riled up and, oh, we're so bitter and vengeful and we don't trust God to take care of it. We're going to take care of it. And so everybody around us goes, I don't want any part of that. So instead of changing the culture for the better, we become the people that everybody goes, ah, Christians are just angry. So what do we do? What do you do in a terrible math class where you don't have the power? And honestly, you shouldn't take power because it's not going to work out well. What do you do when you feel like, man, I'm not always right. I've got a lot of problems wrong, but I believe the book. The book says this. I think 12 times 12 is 144, even if I'm wrong. But I put 144 on my paper and I got scored incorrectly and it's angering. Maybe we could form a study group, right? Like, that's what I would do. That's a solution. In fact, I think that's the solution. In fact, I'm pretty sure that's what the church was. In fact, the reason why we meet on Sunday is because they already had a service on Saturday at the tabernacle, you know, and they decided, hey, we'll go to the temple on Saturday. We'll be part of our culture. But on Sunday, maybe we could get together and have a little study group. And in our study group, you know, in our study group, we could talk about what the book actually says. And we could decide, even when we disagree with the book, we're going to go by the book. And see, really, that's what followers of Jesus are. You know, like, as I said earlier, like, followers of Jesus are not the people that are just great at math. They're not the people who never make mistakes. They're not even the best people. Like, some people say, you know, well, you don't have to be godly to be good. You can be an atheist and be good. I agree with that. Because being good is not it. You can be good, but one of the interesting things I find about people who go, well, I don't believe in God, but I'm good. I just say to them, why? How do you know that's good? Have you ever thought about that? Like, why do we even know that's good? Well, because what God says, and that's why society knows that's good, even though we fight against it. So here's the thing. Like, we're not the people who necessarily do good all the time. We're the people who go, there is an answer. There is a creator. I believe him. And I believe that Jesus was sent, and so I want to read you something that Paul wrote to this place called Ephesus. And the interesting thing, and I'm going to put this on the blog this week, I want you to read Ephesians 4, because honestly, you could just read Ephesians 4 and go, well, there's pretty much every instruction I need to live on this planet. Because here's the thing about the Ephesian culture. I don't know, like, a lot about the history, and we don't have a lot of time to go over it, but I do know this. It sounds a lot like America. Because Paul starts out this talk. He starts out this talk in verses 5 and 6. He says this. He says, there's one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God, one Father. He's over all. And he's saying this over and over in many ways, going, there's only one right answer. It's not like you've heard. It's not everything's okay if you think it. Because they had a relativistic, pluralistic society just like we're becoming. And he said, no, there's one, which is the most offensive thing you could say. That's what Jesus said. No one comes to God except by me. And here's another thing that he said that reminds me of the way we live. And this is why I think, like, Paul would say Ephesians is like a really bad math class, because he said, don't live, and this is in verse 17. I'll put this up and you can read it yourself. It says, don't live as the Gentiles do, as the people in Ephesus. He said, for they're hopelessly confused. Their minds are full of darkness. They wander far from the life God gives them because they've closed their minds and they've hardened their hearts and they have no sense of shame. You know, I've said those words like, have we no shame? No, we do not. You know, Paul said those same things about that culture. And then he said something that's true of us. You know, he's going through about like how rotten their culture is, how they think there's many answers, but there's not, and how they're just like so confused and deluded. And then he starts talking to these Christians, to these Christ followers, to these Jesus people. And he basically says to them, and you're not that great yourself. Because listen to this. In verse 28, it says, if you're a thief. He's not talking about culture. Now he's talking to the people that he's ministering to. He says, if you're a thief, quit stealing. Use your hands for good hard work and give generously to others. Don't use foul or abusive language. Instead, be good and helpful so that your words will be an encouragement. And do not bring sorrow to God's Spirit. And he gives this list of things. He's like, obviously, the reason why he's saying these things is because they were doing them, just like us. He's going, your culture's corrupt. It's diluted. It's like a bad math class, and you're not that great yourself. And then he said these words, and I just want to share them with you. I want to leave you with them because I think this is the answer. In our study group, that's what we are. Action Church, churches all over, we're just a study group. We're not trying to take over the class. You know, we're not going to take over the government. We're not going to do any of those things. We're just going to form a study group. And he said these words. At the very end of this whole chapter, this whole thought of how we should live, he said this. He says, get rid of all bitterness and rage and anger. Get rid of harsh words and slander, as well as all types of evil behavior. You know, he said, all that stuff we've been talking about all month, all those feelings we have, you know, all those, it's natural to feel angry, but he's like, get rid of all of the effects of that. Don't do any of that. Not inside our group. And then he said this. He said, instead, be kind to each other, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, just as God, through Christ, has forgiven you. And I think there's one word in there that's like, oh, you said it, Paul. Instead. See, gang, we're not called, and we would be foolish to try to take over culture. And all, and I know, like, you're like, well, this guy, he said, and my guy, and we could. No, it's not what Paul said. Not what works. He said, instead of that, do this. And I want you to notice what that instead is. It's not a list of things not to do. It's a list of things to do. He said, be kind to each other. Tenderhearted. Not hard-hearted, not like, oh, I'm cynical, oh, I've been burned before. He said, no, inside our study group, we're tender-hearted. We're thinking like, oh, this hurts me, this makes me angry, but guess what? I understand. Like, I know that I love this person, and I understand probably where they're coming from, and my heart is soft for them. It's not hard. I'm not going to be cynical. I'm not going to think they're out to get me because they're inside and together. I'm going to forgive again and again and again. And the reason why I forgive is not because I'm good. I've made a lot of mistakes. I've got a lot of problems wrong. But because it says, just as God through Christ has forgiven you. See, you can't be inside the study group. You're welcome to attend. I mean, you can come inside this room, and you can be inside our study group if you're just checking it out. Even if you like the idea of multiple answers more, you're welcome in here. But you can't be in the study group long-term and think, well, I've got all the answers, because we just don't. And you notice that it says, I'm going to forgive others just as God through Christ has forgiven you. Like God, who is absolutely perfect, God, who is absolutely holy, God, who never had a wrong answer, forgave us through a person, through Christ, through his son, who he sent down to earth to be in our messed up class. And in the same way, he says that we're to forgive each other just as God used Christ to forgive us, we become that same thing to others. And notice, and I want the band to come back up here. It's not, we're going to take over, we're going to change the world, and someday Jesus is going to come back and be like, oh, great job, I can't wait to move down here. That's not the story at the end of the book if you've read Revelation. Instead, it's still a mess, it's still angry, it's still like the worst math class in the whole world, but guess what? There are people in a study group every week, every day together who live differently. And people who go, well, I don't know, and keep this in mind, folks. It's far more popular to say there are lots of answers. If you believe in your heart, it's right. No, it's not. It's much more offensive to say, no, there's one answer, and it's not my answer or your answer. It's God's answer. But what if when those people came into our study group, even if they're not sure we're right about that, they go, wow, I want to be here. Because these people are different. Like out there, it's angry. Out there, everyone's at each other's throats. Out there, like, oh, it's just tense all the time. But in here, it's not that they get all the answers right, but wow, do they love each other? Wow, do they forgive each other? I just wish the whole world could be like this. I wish the whole class could be like this study group. And that's the solution for our world. Let's pray. Dear Jesus, God, we're sort of at a loss on how to live. God, because it's so funny, like we get angry at things that are wrong and we want to just, oh, we'll put things straight. And you told us very clearly that's the wrong answer. But God, thanks for this simple, simple plan. God, it doesn't seem like it would work, but yet it has for thousands of years. It seems like we need to grab power, but instead, what you taught us is to forgive and love each other and to live a completely different way and to be willing to be marked wrong even if we're right. To overlook wrongs instead of taking up arms. It's just an amazing thought, God. And so for this church, God, for this place, for our little study group, God, I pray we would begin to live this out even more every day. God, we would forgive our brothers and sisters, and we would forgive those who hurt us, not because we're good people, not because we have it all together, not because we even feel like it, because you forgave us. In your name we pray. Amen.
Woo! It would have been really cool if you could have like said keep on rocking in the full world and then just like drop the mic and walk off and then they go into that. That would have been so awesome.
Anyway, I always go home and go, I should have.
Next time.
Exactly.
May follow up, please, again.
Okay, rebuttal.
Yeah, I know, I'm sorry. So why do all these things? Why, if the rules are different in this current world?
Well, I understand. Like, if you're going to get scored wrong for writing 144 or 12 times, why not just say...
Let's just both, like, laugh. Like, all right, 142, I got you.
Yeah, whatever. But here's the thing. It's like, just like middle school math seems like it takes an eternity, but it's very short in your lifetime. Like, doesn't it seem like 5 minutes if you're as old as I am? Like, it was such a short period of your life, and that's the same thing about this world we live in. Like, if we don't learn the right answer, if we kind of go, okay, I'll say it's 142, there's an eternity out there that depend on us saying the right answer, just like our career at a big box store that I won't name. It matters forever if you don't learn 12 times 12.
I feel like there's only two places that you're going to buy that much tape, but
Never mind. We don't know where it was. It was an unnamed location.
All right. That makes sense.
I don't want to enrage anyone.
I feel like my senior year of math took longer than everything else. But
you told me you just wrote love letters to Rachel and you didn't pay attention.
In my defense, I already had all the math credits, so the senior year was
you got a
blow
great wife. So actually, I think your story works better than mine. Actually.
Anyways, all those other suckers who learned calculus.
Exactly.
All right. So if you have any questions or comments, you can fill out a card and talk to someone there. We have action groups that meet, so if you're interested, not in just this kind of a study group that we meet on Sunday mm-hmm. mornings, but there's groups that meet during the week that you can be a part of too. So you can fill out a card and get more information out there. And if this is your first time at Action Church, we have a gift for you. You can see Denise at the table. We don't want anything from you. We just want to give you something as kind of a thanks for coming today. So next week.
Oh, man, I'm so excited, and we've been talking about this forever. I feel like we've been talking about this for a year. But next week, we're starting a brand new series called Some Assembly Required. I believe we have a special guest and a gift. It's just going to be crazy, and we're going to be talking about it on the blog and on the app this week. But we think so many times, like, that when God gives us a gift, you've heard about people going, oh, this was a gift from God. And we wonder, like, well, why didn't we get any gifts from God? Like, you know, I imagine gifts from God being like something like you look on your porch and there's like a Porsche. I don't know. It wouldn't fit on my porch, but that would be awesome.
A puppy.
Yeah, I'd rather have a Porsche. If you bring me a Porsche, I'd be happy. Bring me a puppy, probably couldn't keep it. But anyway, like, we always think, like, oh, my goodness, a gift from God has to be. But there's always some assembly required. And so people go, well, this can't be from God because it seems like hard work. We're going to talk about that whole thing. And it's for our church. It's for you personally and me personally. And it will change your life if you understand this concept. So we need it.
Cool.
Thank you for just being a part of Action Church. We ask every week that you invite your friends, invest your money, and get involved. So if you are a part of this, if you consider Action Church your home, we just ask that you drop money in the boxes in the back or whatever you feel like you can support Action Church.
Yeah, you can swipe a card at the iPad. You can give online in your app. There's a lot of ways that you can support. But we also need you to get involved, and we appreciate that. We were just talking this morning. Like, people were saying, like, isn't it funny that one of the complaints we have right now is, like, we're getting done too early. And I said, you guys have no idea what a great problem that is to have. We have such a great crew here, and I guarantee you, like, now this is a good time to join the Action Church crew, actually, because you get to hang out with fun people, and there's not as much work as there used to be because we have such a good crew. So I'm just saying, like, in the past, you'd have to work a lot harder than now, so be there.
So next month, we're going to talk about hard work, but you're telling everybody to come so they don't have to work as much.
I'm just all trying to help. I'm a helper.
You are an enigma. All right, so I'll pray for us, and we can get out of here. Dear Heavenly Father, I just thank you for just with wisdom from Paul, and I pray in our lives that I know for myself I'm not a perfect Christian. It's just ridiculous how awful I am, and God, I just pray that I kind of admit that and know in my life that I can seek forgiveness and that I can actually go out and love others and kind of just instead of my old way, instead of the nature, I can turn from that. And I thank you for this place of Action Church. Thank you for all these people, and pray that we go out and love you and love others. In your name, amen.
Amen.
Keep on rocking in the free world.